And, of course, this is the hour we'll take your phone calls. And, again, if you're a police officer and you've stopped somebody who is sleep driving, check in with us. If you've been sleepwalking or a family member has, check in with us. If you just have a call or a story or perhaps just a question, check in with us, too, on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Dr. Robert Rosenberg with us. We'll get to your calls in a second. Robert, why do babies sleep so much?
Babies have no circadian cycle, George. For the first 3 to 6 months, they require at least 16 hours of sleep, and they sleep on and off throughout the day. There's no sleep-wake schedule until about 5 to 6 months, and by 9 months, most 75% of children have a sleep-wake schedule that's set. But they sleep so much probably because there's so much neurodevelopment going on during sleep. Some recent studies, for instance, children, infants, babies, for the first year, 50% of their sleep is REM sleep, whereas it tapers off to about 15 to 20% as we get older. And we believe that one of the reasons they have so much REM sleep, and they enter sleep through REM, which adults don't, REM is the last cycle of that we go through, may have to do with development of the brain. And there's actually some studies showing that the occipital lobe, the visual cortex of the brain, is very dependent upon REM sleep in infants to develop properly.
That's amazing. And caffeine. A lot of people take caffeine to stay awake. Right. Does that, as a stimulant, really work?
Yeah, it works. But the problem is, if you're an insomniac or a person who doesn't get enough sleep and you're trying to compensate with caffeine, then obviously if you're drinking the caffeine well after 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, if you're having that mocha latte or that coffee, that may be the cause that you can't get to sleep or stay asleep, because caffeine blocks the production of a chemical in the brain called adenosine, which builds up all day long to try to help us to fall asleep by the time we go to bed.
All right, let's go to some of the calls here for you. Larry is in Florida. Welcome to the program. Hi, Larry. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, George. Dr. Rosenberg. Hi. A couple of questions about sleep apnea.
Sure.
I have it. My brother has it. He has to wear a mask.
Yep.
And I've literally woke up gasping for air. I thought I was that close to dying.
Right.
But I was wondering if it runs in the family, because I had two female cousins that were 2 years apart in age, and both of them died from sleep apnea. And I was wondering if the position you're sleeping in has a lot to do with it, because I can't sleep on my back or sleep sitting up, or I'll wake up gasping for air.
Two great questions. The answer to the first question, Larry, is yes, there is a hereditary tendency. That doesn't mean that everybody whose dad had sleep apnea will have it, but study after study have shown that there is a much higher incidence in families, children, fathers, mothers, much higher. So it may have to do with structure. It may have to do with the way our brains are wired and our brain stems are wired. So yes, there is a hereditary tendency. And as far as sleeping on your back, yeah, most people, though not all, their sleep apnea is worse when they're on their back, because the tongue goes backwards, gravity, and narrows the throat even more. So many people with sleep apnea, before they finally get treatment, find it almost impossible to sleep on their back, and sometimes for years they don't know why they couldn't sleep on their back.
Why do so many people have insomnia these days, Robert?
Good question. I think part of it is overstimulation. Part of it is a lot of anxiety and depression, which is a problem. And like I said earlier, 40% of people with anxiety and depression suffer from insomnia. I think the electronics have a lot to do with it. I think too many people are taking their work into the bedroom. They're taking their computer into the bedroom. They're worrying in the bedroom, and they're just ruminating too much, and they don't know how to relax. And, George, they don't exercise. We find that people who exercise regularly have a much lower incidence of insomnia than people who don't exercise or
True.
Exercise rarely.
That is a big point. Terry's in Birmingham, Alabama. Hi, Terry. Go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I had an experience with a girlfriend of mine. She had terrible apnea, and I would count 30 seconds sometimes before she'd breathe.
Oh, my gosh.
And I gave her vitamin C on a couple of occasions. And she slept great, but she just wouldn't believe that she was getting any help from it, and she wasn't a vitamin taker, and she would not take the vitamin. But I was sure that, you know, that was helping her sleep.
What do you think of that, Robert? Vitamin C?
I got to be honest, vitamin C is great. I take some vitamin C, but there's never been a study that showed vitamin C would keep your airway from closing down, George. And I've got plenty of people with sleep apnea who take huge amounts of vitamin C for other health reasons, and they still have the sleep apnea.
And that's the main thing of apnea. The airway kind of shuts down?
It does. It's a mechanical obstruction to the airway, George. The soft portion of the airway, the pharynx, from the behind your nose way back to where the vocal cords begin, is all soft tissue. There's no bone. There's no cartilage. It's a tube, and that tube can collapse, and it can collapse at multiple levels. It can collapse behind your tongue, just above your larynx. It can collapse behind your nose. The bottom line is it collapses, and when it does, there's nothing for you to do except wake up for a moment, take a breath, go back to sleep, and usually not remember anything that happened.
Robert, when you're exhausted, right, you can barely keep your eyes open, you're tired, what part of the body is doing that? Is it the brain?
The brain. It's actually the buildup of, in part, it's the buildup of that chemical I told you called adenosine.
Okay.
As the day wears on, we produce more and more adenosine in the brain as a breakdown product of energy, of what we call ATP. And anyway, adenosine builds up, and when it gets to very high levels, it's almost impossible to resist sleep unless you drink some coffee or do something to disturb the ability of adenosine to drive you into sleep.
I have found personally that if I keep going,
yeah,
I'm okay, but when I slow down, that's when it catches up to me.
Well, sure, and also, George, when you slow down, most people with sleep disorders will tell me, "Well, I'm not sleepy," and then I'll say, "Well, what about when you're not actively engaged?" "Oh, yeah, I'm sleepy then," and then the wife will say, "Yeah, you can't stay awake at a movie, you can't stay awake when watching TV, and every time you open up the newspaper at night, you end up slumping over in the chair." So when they're not actively engaged in things, that is usually when the sleep becomes really severe.
What is sleep paralysis?
Sleep paralysis is actually not that uncommon. As we wake up in the morning, some of us are wide awake, but we can't move our bodies. It can go on for 2 to 3 minutes, maybe 30 seconds. It's very frightening because you feel like you can't breathe. What sleep paralysis really is the intrusion of REM sleep, that paralyzing portion of sleep we discussed earlier this evening, which paralyzes your muscle. It's lingering. You're awake, but some portions of REM are still working, and therefore you can't move your muscles. It can be brought on by sleep deprivation, sometimes too much caffeine, but in a lot of people, it's just something that they have, and they learn to live with it, and what I do with those people is I just reassure them, because I rarely ever give anybody medications for sleep paralysis.
Have you ever, I'm going to take a supernatural question here for you, that's what we do sometimes, sure. You ever hear of the old hag syndrome?
Yeah, that is sleep paralysis.
Well, people see this old lady running around.
Yeah, well, they think she was sitting on their chest.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, societies in the Dark Ages and back, yeah, they had all kinds of names for, as a matter of fact, there's a famous painting, and I forgot who it was, with a devil sitting on somebody's chest as they're awakening from sleep, and that's supposed to represent sleep paralysis.
Sometimes you fall asleep on the couch watching TV, and you don't want to move.
Right.
What is it about that watching television couch thing?
Well, you know, the thing with falling asleep on the couch is I try to discourage that. I mean, because if you're a normal sleeper, so what? You know, you can sleep with a Fellini movie going on. But some people can't sleep in the bedroom, then they go into the living room, and they turn on the TV, and they end up falling asleep there. And then their brain begins to associate the bedroom with not being asleep and the living room with being asleep, and it becomes a real problem. I have patients who literally, that's what they do all night, up and down, and they end up sleeping in the other room.
Huh. What about eating late? Does that affect sleeping?
Yeah, it depends on what you eat. If you eat a large meal, you're going to set your digestive juices off, and certainly bloating, that will be a problem. If you eat spicy foods, that will raise your core body temperature and can cause heartburn. Any elevation of the body temperature will inhibit sleep. So, and certainly people need to watch out for eating things like pepperoni, bacon, and aged cheeses at night. Those foods release tyramine, and that's an amino acid that stimulates the release of epinephrine, which is the one hormone you don't want coursing through your blood at night when you're trying to sleep. So I advise people, if you want to have a little snack, and if you can combine something rich in tryptophan with some complex carbohydrates, they can promote sleep.
Melatonin, is it worth it for sleeping?
I think it's a great, I can't tell you how many people I use small doses of melatonin on, very small. The people who are taking 10, 15 milligrams, it's just overkill. After 3 milligrams or 5, forget it. But in some people, especially people who have circadian disorders, jet lag when they fly to Europe, people with delayed sleep phase syndrome, what I was telling you about earlier, rather than putting them on a drug, I tell them, let's take a little melatonin, but you got to take it an hour or two before your desired bedtime, not at bedtime. It's really not a sleeping pill.
Right.
It's a circadian phase advancer. And so if you get the room dark and quiet and you take melatonin an hour before, you'll have a much better chance of falling asleep.
How many milligrams?
No more than 2 to 3. And in children, my pediatric cases, a half of a milligram.
Wild dreams with melatonin, Robert.
Some people do get wild dreams with melatonin, yes, and some people complain of headaches. So I'm not saying it's for everybody, George, nothing is, but in most people, in most studies, the long-term use of melatonin has found, and melatonin has some good antioxidant effects, and we're finding out that there are melatonin receptors in the pancreas and that in some diabetics, melatonin helps control blood sugar. So it's got many, many effects we weren't even aware of before.
Steve's in New York. Welcome to the program, Stephen.
Yes, thanks for having me on, guys.
Sure thing.
I kind of have a unique problem here. I used to sleep fine up until about 3 years ago, August, middle of summer, 5:30 a.m. I woke up on my right side. I was next to my wife. The room was still lit. I rolled over on my back and looked up straight ahead, and there was a square vortex thing in my ceiling, and inside it was a pair of orange eyes. Probably about 2 feet by 2 feet square.
Jeez.
The eyes were maybe a foot, foot and a half up where the ceiling should have been. It froze my body up. It locked me up. All I could move was my eyes. It lasted for over 5 minutes. And at the last thing, I remember thinking that it was a demon that had come for me. And then a couple seconds later, the eyes kind of went straight up away from me like they were going to space. I watched the ceiling melt back and the blackness melt back. Now, I've already reported this to MUFON, and they told me that this happens to quite a few people. My problem now is I can't sleep. I lay in bed all night. I'm peeking up at the ceiling all the time, thinking this thing's coming back. I usually fall asleep after the wife leaves for work.
It's like an anxiety. For a moment, I thought I was talking to our buddy Dan Aykroyd, but... So what's happening to him, Robert?
Well, obviously, and you hit the nose on the nail on the head, George. He's developed an anxiety about his bedroom, and I'm wondering if he sleeps in another room or a motel. Not that I'm saying he should do that, if he finds that not to be the problem, but apparently he's developed a significant anxiety, and it's something that really should be dealt with as a fear or as a phobia.
It's
or an anxiety
a phobia.
Disorder.
That's true.
It's not, it's really not so much for a sleep doctor as for someone else to help him with this anxiety issue. Now, there are some sleep aids that both help with sleep and are anxiolytic, but I don't like to see people on them for too long because they become addictive.
What do you think of these low-dose sleeping pills, good or bad?
You mean the tendency to try to get Ambien and Lunesta down to lower doses?
Like you can get some stuff over the counter at drugstores.
Oh.
You don't even need
a
prescription.
That stuff's Benadryl. That's okay. That's the antihistamines. They're basically just allergy pills that we used to use in the 60s, which are sedating. So they're all diphenhydramine or doxalamine.
Okay, so that's where you see the old... When you used to take a allergy pill, it said, don't operate machinery.
Exactly. That's why. Because the old allergy pills contained what they're now marketing as sleeping pills, and they're not really sleeping pills. They're allergy pills. They have side effects. They can cause balance problems. They can cause urinary retention. They can cause dryness of the mouth. They're not without problems. People should be very wary of those. And they tend to wear off after a couple of weeks of use.
Have you ever found someone who has gone days and days without sleeping?
I've had people, George, who claim they've gone months without sleeping, okay? Now,
months?
Or in weeks. And I had a lady from Sedona who told me she hadn't slept in 20 weeks. Anyway, and it's not that they're crazy. There are two possibilities. But the main one is some people suffer from something called sleep state misperception.
What's that?
Well, that is where, while they are sleeping, they perceive that they are awake. It's very real. It's not on. We used to think it occurred in 5% of the population, but we're finding in the veterans coming back that as many as 15% of them have this form of insomnia where, you know, you could put them in the sleep lab and they'll be asleep for 6 or 7 hours on their brain waves. And when you wake them up, they'll say, I slept 30 minutes. I only slept an hour. No, I didn't sleep at all. And it's just the way their brains are wired. And so there are people who perceive they're not sleeping when they actually are. And what I do is basically I bring them in the lab or we do an outpatient EEG on them while they're sleeping. And I begin to show them that, you know, no, your brain waves say you're sleeping. You're not crazy. That's the way you're wired. There are some possible medications that might help you with that, but for now, most of the time it's to educate them. As far as the record for not sleeping, that was a disc jockey in New York back in the 60s who went 274 hours, and at the end of that period of time, he slept for 18 hours, and he was just fine.
And went back on the air.
Went back on the air. I mean, he holds the record, as that I know of, for the longest period of staying awake without falling asleep.
Who was that? Wasn't Wolfman Jack, was it?
No. Nobody. No, wasn't Wolfman Jack. Nobody you or I would remember, although I was growing up in New York City at the time, and I vaguely remember this guy and the radio show that was covering him.
Next up, we go to Jen in Sherman Oaks, California. Hi, Jen. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
We sure can.
Okay, great. After 20 years of various doctors throwing antidepressants at me and then giving up, I finally came across the definition of idiopathic hypersomnia or hypersomnia disorder. And even after reading all that I can about this and feeling like they were writing about my whole life, I present it to my doctors who they don't really know about sleep disorders. They're reluctant to send me to a sleep doctor. I even went to Edelman Center for Mental Health yesterday, and I gave them, you know, hey, I have this revelation, and I believe that I have this, and I told them why, and then they're like, okay, let's get back to your depression. I want to know more about that. And I need some kind of way to convince my doctors to send me to a sleep doctor.
Sure. Idiopathic hypersomnolence syndrome is not hard to diagnose. I've got lots of patients with it. I mean, it's not a common sleep disorder. It's kind of like narcolepsy, George, in that these people have a tremendously hard time staying awake during the day, and some of them will sleep up to 10 or 11 hours. They're called long sleepers. In any event, the problem is that they can't stay awake, and sometimes they're told they're depressed or whatever. A sleep study will prove it. There's a sleep. You bring the person into the laboratory, you do a diagnostic sleep study, and if that's normal, the following day you do a series of naps called the multiple sleep latency test. And at the end of that period of time, a good sleep physician should be able to diagnose your idiopathic hypersomnolence syndrome if that's what you have.
Good for you, Robert. The book Sleep Soundly Every Night. Where do you get it?
Right now, it's available, I understand, at Barnes & Noble and bookstores. It's pretty active on Amazon.com. We seem to be moving up. I try not to look because I don't want to get nervous. It is available on Amazon.com. It's available on Demos Health, the publisher. It's available on BarnesandNobles.com, and it's available in bookstores, I understand, around the country now.
Good. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with everybody in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. I'll stick with us all week long on Coast to Coast AM. This email in, George, I'm a law enforcement officer and encountered a person who was behaving in a way similar to what your guest described for someone driving in a sleep-like state. They were trying to communicate, but were saying things that simply made no sense. It wasn't anything like someone who was impaired on narcotics, and the portable breath test showed zero presence of alcohol. I believe now after hearing your guest that this person was actually asleep. I was not aware of this, but will now keep it in mind. How about that? Anyway, we'll come back in a moment with Dr. Robert Rosenberg. We'll take final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to our final segment with Dr. Robert Rosenberg here. Robert, even this has happened to me. I have driven miles and I'm wide awake.
Right.
But I don't remember sometimes getting from point A to point B. I mean, I just don't remember how I got there. What happened?
That's called automatic behavior, George. I mean, we all go through it, but the people who have it most often are people who are usually sleep deprived. So we find that people who are sleep deprived, one of the things we find is that they have this automatic behavior where they're really kind of in a twilight zone.
Yeah,
they're not asleep, but they're awake, and that's probably why they don't remember it. And a lot of people with narcolepsy commonly manifest automatic behavior as well. They just, you know, I don't remember how I got here, but I got here.
Is it a kind of a good way if you always drive long distances? Is it helpful?
I don't know. That's a good question. I would think that if you're driving long distances and you're having automatic behavior, there's a chance that in some cases they might start having what's called microsleeps. There are people who have microsleeps where they literally fall asleep for a few seconds, then again and again, and they don't realize that they're falling asleep while driving.
Let's go to Pam in St. Genevieve, Missouri. Hello, Pamela. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi there.
Good morning.
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 Yes, I'm a retired police officer. I had to go on retirement disability. It caused a lot of health problems from working split shifts and working many years as a nighttime police officer. I worked the night shift for like 11 years.
Right.
My doctor had ordered a study done for me. It was kind of like a polygraph test. Are you there?
Yeah, listening to you.
Oh, okay. It was like a polygraph test. They determined that my sympathetic reflex system and my parasympathetic reflex system were backwards. So I can sleep standing up, but I can't sleep when I lay down.
You're a horse.
Yes.
I am awake for like 2 or 3 days at a time.
Wow. Well, what's going on with her, Robert?
You know, I'd like to say, as far as the polygraph with that test, I don't want to defame anybody, but I don't think you could tell that your parasympathetic and your sympathetic nervous system are upside down that way, other than doing blood tests to check levels of hormones in the blood
first
during various hours. So that would be the only way to do that. As far as the shift worker, though, it's very common for shift workers, police officers, and I have a lot of police officers who, after 11 years, really can't sleep anymore during the nighttime. They have a hard time sleeping. They have a hard time falling asleep. They have all kinds of issues with sleep. And so it's just not uncommon. The best thing to do, and what I always advise people, is try to establish your sleep-wake schedule. It might be 2 in the morning till 10 or 3 in the morning till 11. Stick to it. Don't vary from it. And if you're still having a problem, as she says she's up for 2 or 3 days, then it's time not to get a polygraph, but to see a real sleep specialist and try to get to the bottom of it, because there may be something more going on here than an upside-down sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system.
What's amazing, Robert, how many people have sleep issues?
Oh, it's 70, the last report was 70 million Americans.
Huge. Huge, huge, huge. What about ages? Teenagers as opposed to, younger adults and then adults?
Well, we require more sleep as when we're younger, to a point. So teenagers have two problems going on with them. Number one, a high school student needs about 9 to 10 hours of sleep, and most of them are getting 7, or in some cases only 6, which is really a problem. Number two, teenagers develop a circadian movement where they literally start to produce their melatonin at late hours, 11 or 12 o'clock at night. So that's one of the reasons these kids can't get to sleep at night, is because there's a physiological reason. And then usually by the time they hit their 20s, it returns to a normal secretion at a normal hour. But they have a hell of a time during that period of time, getting to sleep at an early hour, plus they're on the TV or the videos. And we find with college students that they really need a good 8 to 9 hours of sleep. And there was a study done at Stanford on athletes, and they enforced them. I mean, the teams, football and the tennis team, basketball team, they had them sleep 1 hour more than they were used to. And they tested them. And after they increased sleep by just 1 hour, their reaction time, their athletic performance, their sprint speeds increased remarkably.
Wow. Is too much sleep, though, bad for you?
Well, it may be. I mean, that's the big debate now, is can you, are people who sleep more than 9 hours, is that a problem? My answer would be, if you're sleeping that much, then maybe there's a reason. Maybe the quality of your sleep is poor. Maybe you have some other medical or psychiatric problem you need to look into. But most studies, as I said earlier, show that if you sleep more than 8 or 9 hours a night, but you keep active physically, you're probably going to do just fine.
Let's go to Steve in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hello, Stephen. Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hello. My name is Steve Warner.
Hi, Steve.
Hi.
And my wife has central sleep apnea from her pain meds.
Right.
And I have obstructive sleep apnea.
Okay.
And we both have it real bad. And I have it real bad. And I can't handle the face mask on my face.
Okay.
And I was wondering if I've heard that medical marijuana might help.
It'll do nothing for your sleep apnea, Steve.
Oh, it wouldn't?
Not a thing.
Yeah, because I have a problem with the mask blowing the air in my throat, sleeping with that, because I sleep all day, like during the day. I get like 16 hours of sleep.
Well, what you need to do, Steve, is see somebody who specializes in sleep, and they can discuss your options. Plus, in my facility, for instance, we do a lot of desensitization work. We do mask fittings. I can tell you that majority of my patients who have your problem, not all, but the majority, when we work with them, we can usually get them acclimated to some kind of mask. And if that doesn't work, then we start to look at alternative treatment for sleep apnea that might be necessary. But if your sleep apnea is that severe, you're going to have to do something.
The mask's important because you have to push the oxygen down the throat.
Yeah, well, the compressed air, the compressed air from the machine has to be delivered by a mask. Now, some of the masks look like little oxygen cannulas. Some go over the nose, some go over the nose and mouth. It depends upon the fit. It depends on whether your mouth falls open and when you're getting the air. So we might have to give you a mask that goes nose and mouth, and we might use a chin strap. But the mask is the method of delivery to your airway. The importance of the mask, or the problem with the mask, is that it's very important that you be fitted by somebody who really knows what they're doing, as opposed to just being given some mask by a durable medical equipment company. No one's ever worked with you. It's very important you be fitted properly. And if you're having problems with the mask, you need to talk to your sleep specialist about it.
Okay, let's go next to David in Kentucky, east of the Rockies. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hey, George. Hey, Dr. Rosenberg.
Hey, how are you?
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
How are y'all?
Good.
Great.
Good. I'll be brief. I got two questions. One is, I deliver newspapers at night, and I try to go to bed at 7 o'clock and get up around 12 to 12:30. I never can sleep all the way through. I'm awake every hour to hour and 10 minutes, just for a few minutes. Do my route, get back in about 3:30, 4 o'clock, have to sit up for an hour and go back to sleep and average about 3.5 to 4 more hours of sleep. I'm just wondering if that's enough sleep for my system. Is it broken sleep? It's not good. And the other question is, my granddaughter took a SAT test for a college entry, and they told her to do 17 toe curls, no more than 17, and that would relax you. And it seems like about 80% of the time it works, but I don't know if it's my mind telling me that or what.
Relax her to help her sleep?
Yeah, so do these toe curls, 17 of them, and it would relax you and help you go to sleep.
In my book, we talk about a thing called progressive muscle relaxation, which does help people go to sleep. Basically, you tense and relax muscle groups, starting with your hand, then your elbow, then your shoulder, and go around the body. And as you're doing that, you breathe in and you breathe out, and you try to breathe in when you're tensing it and breathe out as you relax. And it does relax the muscles, and it does take the mind off of whatever it might be on that has nothing to do with sleep. And so it's an excellent form of meditation without really having to practice meditation. And it's been found to be very effective in helping people to get into a sleep-like state.
What about things like music? I call it spa music, Robert, where, you know, sounds of rain or an ocean wave. Is that help you?
Yeah, actually, there are some good apps on phones. There are phones that produce pink sound, which basically is a bunch of frequency mixed together, but the octaves don't increase, and it sounds like rain. Some people find that helps. Some people find soothing music can help them fall to sleep. There are there's a thing called a binaural beats, which is really wild, where you've got the app sends different frequency sounds into the left ear and the right ear, and what the brain seems to do is cancel out the frequencies that are the same and adapts the difference between the two frequencies, and if the frequency is set properly, it can induce slow wave sleep. So that's something else that's out there. So sound can help. In fact, there's another study recently that came out and said lavender, believe it or not, aromatherapy.
Yeah.
Can, and I'm a true believer now because I read four studies, well-done studies, where lavender was used in an intensive care unit, lavender was used in a nursing home of Alzheimer's patients, and the studies were well done, and it certainly helped the people to fall asleep.
Jack is in Boise, Idaho. Hey, Jack, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Hey, I've had everything. I've got obstructive sleep apnea. I got nightmares. I mean, really bad nightmares.
Right.
I use a CPAP, but the only way I can use the CPAP with the mask on is to take Ambien or Lunesta. But if I take Ambien or Lunesta, I order things on the internet, I eat, I've gained like 100 pounds in the last 4 months. And then I go to the bathroom a lot at night, and one night on Ambien, I walked out the front door, peed on the porch, and tried to get in the neighbor's house to go back to bed, and the cops come and brought me home, and I went to bed and didn't even know it the next day.
Oh, my God.
Not uncommon.
Robert, he's got it bad.
Mike, go ahead. Anything else?
There was a shift worker in the Air Force, either from 4 p.m. to 2 a.m., or like a 10:30 p.m. till 8, 9 o'clock a.m. Mm-hmm. for almost 18 out of 25 years, and I can, if I do fall asleep, I can fall asleep for 5 minutes, and if anything wakes me up, then I can't get back to sleep for another day.
Okay.
Another day.
Well, okay. I am and I've tried everything you said in the last 25 minutes. I've tried, you know, the aromatherapy, the internet, the noises on the internet. I've tried the valerian, all the natural route, you know.
Right.
All right, well, listen in the room.
Okay. Okay. First of all, if you are having any episodes of sleepwalking or anything like that on Ambien or Lunesta, you need to stop it immediately. That's the first thing. I mean, if I were your doctor, I would tell you that's it. We're not going to use that. Now, it may be that their cognitive behavioral therapy under the guise of auspices of a good sleep specialist might help you. On the other hand, there are some medications which do not work on the part of the brain that Ambien and Lunesta work on that I sometimes use in my patients who have your kind of problem, because if it's a choice between a medication and untreated sleep apnea, they're probably going to die of a heart attack, and I try to pick the safest type of medication. So I'm not going to give you the names on the air, but there are drugs that don't induce that kind of problem, that are very safe, are not addictive, and in certain cases like yours where it's a matter of, hey, this guy needs to be treated and he just can't do it without medication, I would probably opt to try that if everything else failed. But again, you're the kind of person who should be under the care of a board-certified sleep doctor. You've got numerous sleep problems, which a good sleep physician could probably decipher and help you with.
Critical to do this. And I guess, Robert, one should do this sooner than later, right?
Sooner, absolutely. There's no reason for him to be going through this at this point, trial and error. No reason for him to be walking on Ambien. I mean, he probably has a very well-intentioned primary care doctor, a health care provider, but when it gets this complicated, it's kind of like, you know, your family doctor is not the guy to take out your gallbladder.
No. Why is it if people don't get enough sleep, you can see it on their face?
Great question. What happens is when people are chronically sleep deprived and don't get enough sleep, we start to put out a lot of cortisol. That's one of the problems with people who sleep 6 hours or less. And when you put out cortisol breaks down collagen. And, you know, women like to get injected with collagen. And so, it's the substance of your skin. Well, the cortisol breaks the collagen down. And therefore, you start to get baggy-looking skin, sallow skin. And people with sleep apnea, recently there was a study done where the people with sleep apnea before and after treatment, when the photos were shown, three-dimensional photos, actually, to a group of observers in a study, they looked to the observer after treatment, they looked 5 and 6 years younger.
That's amazing. Okay, Scott, Richmond, Virginia, first time caller. Go ahead, Scotty.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Great.
Calling, I work a job striking road with is changing shifts all the time. You go from working days to working nights to working 10-hour shifts, 12-hour shifts. I mean, last week I pulled 76, and this upcoming week I'm already on 70.
Wow.
Is this causing any kind of damaging? Like, if you're shifting your sleep schedule back and forth from day to night for a week
and,
period or a day period?
Constantly, Robert.
It's
go
a good
ahead.
Question, Scott. We know that shift workers have a higher incidence of diabetes, heart disease, stroke, cancer, and everything else, and obesity, than do non-shift workers. However, it's usually the shift workers who struggle. That is, they couldn't stay awake when at work, and they couldn't fall asleep when they came home. So those people have a real problem. As far as shift workers who can adapt, although when you're on a rotating shift, that's almost impossible, that may be a different story. But the going back and forth the way you are is causing your melatonin secretion to go up and down and up and down. And we think over a period of time that that melatonin being produced at the wrong times or not being produced at all after several years may in some ways cause the problems in the rest of the body. So it's kind of a new field, but we do know shift workers have a higher incidence of all the disease I mentioned to you, for sure.
It is amazing what sleep or lack of does to somebody, Robert.
Oh, patients of mine, when we finally get them to sleep 7 to 8 hours, who were sleeping 5 to 6 hours, they are different people. In many cases, they throw the antidepressants away. They're no longer anxious. They're just different people.
You take emails through answersforsleep.com?
I certainly do. We try to answer everybody's question within a week, sometimes within 48 hours. So when people, if they email me at answersforsleep.com, we will do our very best. I promise we will answer all the questions, and we will try to do it as quickly as possible.
Robert, I'm going to go home now and go to sleep.
Okay, Joe, sorry I put you to sleep first.
You too, my friend. Be well.
Thank you very much.
All right, Dr. Robert Rosenberg, fantastic man. I'd love to get him back again. His book, Sleep Soundly Every Night, Feel Fantastic Every Day. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.